I am Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the virtual CISO moment. Evan Francine joins us today. He is the CEO of FR Secure and Security Studio, and also the founder, I guess you could say, of the Certified Virtual CISO program. Evan, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's awesome to be here. Hey, I love the intro music too, by the way.
It does get you going, doesn't it? We were talking about before we started about how we both have our respective energy drinks here, It does get it rolling. So, would love to hear about your background. I know you've done an awful lot for the industry and in the industry, but tell us how you got started and why you got started in technology and cyber and what you're doing today.
Well, this is always a tough question for me to answer because, one, I have ADHD, so it's like, where do you start? I mean, there's so many things that have happened over the years with, you know, my career in information security. I started in information security before it was really a thing. We used to do a lot of the things we did, the hacking for bragging rights. And so it was impressing your friends and stuff like that. I grew up in a technology household. My mom and dad were both in technology. I guess the biggest thing I was known for way back then was stealing a copy of Windows 95 in 1994 from Microsoft, which, like I said, things have changed a lot. And I think the statute of limitations is gone out from that.
If we need to bleep that out of here, we could.
No, it's fine. And from there, it just, you know, continued to grow. My first real job, paid job, was, you know, working for IBM, cleaning boot sector viruses off of Windows 3 machines. And then became a Cisco networking guy, taught Cisco classes for a while. And then just weave your way through. Worked for a lot of big companies. I don't work well in big companies because I like to do things right. And in big companies, a lot of times I'm prohibited from doing that. So started FR Secure in 2008 with a mission, and the mission is to fix the broken industry. So find things that are broken in our industry and work on solutions. And, you know, you chip away at the problem, right? You get one person doing information security the right way. Well, that's one less person that's part of the problem, and we just continue to truck on, you know, through that.
And what does Security Studio do? What do you do with Security Studio?
Yeah, so there's evidence of mission like all throughout, you know, my career, even when I didn't know it. So in 2017, so FR Secure was kicking butt. I mean, especially in the VC. So three things that we always focused on with our clients was trust, credibility, and likability. And so we focused on those things as we build, you know, great information security programs for our customers. And I think a couple things were happening. One, we had pushed really the competition out of our local market. And two, we weren't serving enough of that market, you know. So the mission is to fix the broken industry. And when we fight with competition, I don't like calling it competition. You know, you talk about us fighting over the 20% that are actually doing security, and that number is high. Whereas I think if we partner up, we can go get the 80% that aren't doing it. So we took the thing that we were the best at, I think, at the time, which was our information security risk assessments and building roadmaps from those assessments. And we put them onto a platform and then made it available to our competitors to try to help them like compete with us and also solve the problem on a grander scale. So that's how it started.
And somewhere along the line, you've mentioned a little bit about getting to the root cause of solving the issue. Of course, the root cause can be people as well too. You mentioned you solve one person, you solve another. And I know one of the things that you've done that I think is just wonderful for the industry is the FR Secure, the CISSP mentor program. Mm-hmm. How did that get started and where's that at today?
Yeah, another great story. I mean, there's so many cool stories and the blessings that come along with it are just, I mean, they're crazy. You can't even explain it. So we've been told, you know, for many years that we have a talent shortage issue in our industry. And so we were three employees at the time back in 2010. I thought, well, let's just give away free information security training and teach people what you need to pass the CISSP exam, but also what you really need to do out in the field. And we started with six students in 2010. And every year it's just, you know, continued to grow. Last year we had over 20 1,000 teams from 100 countries. Yeah, it's really become awesome, and we love helping people, so it's great.
And it's a free program?
Free, like free. Not like our industry free, which is like strings attached kind of free. No, like free. No strings attached. Nobody's going to call you, no marketing beating you up, trying to sell you something.
Just purely trying to solve a problem.
Correct.
I love that. So anybody who's interested in going for the CISSP, please check out that program. They can find it at FR Secure, right?
Correct. Yep. If you just Google CISSP Mentor Program, you'll find it.
Awesome. Well, I know from your perspective, you know, you've been working with SMBs for a lot longer than I have, and have seen the root cause of a lot of the problems and working to solve the problems. But today, what would you say is one of the greatest threats with regards to cybersecurity to small and mid-sized businesses?
Well, I think two things. I think one, we have this propensity in just humans, I think, to continue to adopt new technology faster than our ability to use it responsibly. Mm-hmm. So that creates a whole bunch of risks. So that's one thing, I think, just ignorance. The second thing is how people prey upon that ignorance. You've got the attackers, you know, the ones you read about all the time, right? Eastern Europeans, state-sponsored, whatever. And then you've got attackers within our own industry. I call them wolves in sheep's clothing. They are people that are selling products, services to SMBs and taking advantage of them. They're wasting their money on controls that don't work, that don't reduce risk. So I think those are the two things, ignorance and being preyed upon.
Well, I was talking, the last guest that I spoke with, Darius Davis, we had a similar conversation, and that I've related the story of one of the folks that a colleague of mine had worked with had gotten a firewall through one of those providers. And then later on, my colleague had come in on a consultative role to try to understand the environment, beef up the environment. And one of the things, of course, you do is to understand the as is. And come to realize that there were a few rules of allow this thing through the firewall, allow this. And then at the bottom, there was an allow any, not a deny any, awesome. But an allow any. And of course, as I mentioned in the last podcast, that's like, well, for those who understand firewalls, that means the firewall does nothing. All it does is produce a little bit of latency. It does zero other than that, for the most part. And when asked why, the provider said, well, the small business, they didn't ask us to put in that rule. And it's like, well, but that's what we're hiring you for. We're not necessarily hiring you for the tools. We're hiring you for the expertise to tell us what it is we need to do, that you should be looking out for us, not to make a sale.
Right. Well, and these things are tools, right? I mean, take a tool that I think most people can relate to, like a table saw. Right. A table saw in the hands of a skilled craftsman is a beautiful tool. It does great things. It's very, very valuable. Put that same tool in the hands of a toddler and you get a much different result. So something like a firewall, I mean, one of the most sophisticated attacks or most famous attacks, you know, of in recent memory was the SolarWinds attack.
Right.
And there was a really interesting dialogue there because one of the organizations that actually mitigated that attack was a government agency, probably our favorite one, the IRS. Hmm. And the way they mitigated that attack was they were blocking egress traffic from that installation. Firewalls have always been built for ingress and egress. So you talk about an any on an ingress, but take it a step further. You already have a tool. Why would you go out and buy more tools when you already have a tool in your environment that's incredibly effective at securing that environment? Use it the way it's meant to be used. And so any MSP or you know, IT shop that's throwing firewalls in, you know, any ingress is absolutely crazy, but serve the client well. You should also be blocking egress.
And they need to understand too, the clients that, and this is one of the things that I see, it's that they built a hodgepodge of different tools and they don't really know what each tool does. Some tools overlap, some tools have gaps, and they don't, and there isn't that issue, that service, if you will, of somebody coming in and explaining what each one is doing. I don't know if I really have a question with that. I think I'm kind of venting my frustration. So, I mean,
I feel you, brother.
I mean, with all of this, well, I'm going to take it a step further because I don't like to slam on MSSPs too much, but there are some out there that will introduce the virtual CISO into the mix as basically an inside sales. And that just really, really torques me. And unfortunately, the end user doesn't, I mean, I came across an instance with this with one of our clients. They had had a penetration test done. All it was a green bone scan that was improperly configured. The Discover, the Alive, was not configured. I guess they were using ICMP, but ICMP was blocked. So basically it found no targets. So they wrote up this nice report, said, well, you know, we spent 3 or 4 days working on this, and we're happy to tell you that we found no vulnerabilities that we could exploit. And here's our report. And there's a green bone scan showing nothing. And I'm like, and they're providing zero value there. I don't know how to break through that conundrum. It's almost as if the MSP world has overtaken the virtual CISO world, taken that term and turned it into something that it never intended to be. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you hit on those two things, right? You had the ignorance on the part of the client, the customer, because when you think about it, who is ultimately responsible for information security in an organization? It's not the MSP. It's not me. It's not you.
No, it's the business.
It's the business. So yeah. There's a great education opportunity on the front end, like, and not the way we've traditionally done it in our industry, where we've oversold fear, we've oversold emotion in the purchasing decisions, but also integrate logic, right? So, and I think we're making progress. And I think as we're building communities, you know, the things that you're doing here with the podcast, getting the word out that this is the only way to do information security. It's not a product industry. It's a service industry. A service industry that needs products and uses products, but only in the right context. So you hit on the ignorance piece, but then you also hit the preyed upon piece. And I think you've got MSPs in our industry who don't know any better. They just don't. I mean, they're not evil. I mean, they are evil, but they don't know they're evil. And then you've got the ones that are evil. I mean, they're just blatantly evil. And
just looking for a profit, basically. And profit margins for MSPs have gone down, particularly like when you got like tools that can help businesses right. Do things more their own, like Office 365, they've had to look somewhere else, basically.
When we've tried to teach MSPs, like this is the right way to do it. And believe it or not, FR Secure, I don't know what the revenue was last year. I'm not a money guy. I'm not motivated by money, but let's say it was $15 million last year, just in vCISO services. And every one of those VCs, because there's a rule at FR Secure that if you ever sell the customer something they don't need, I'll run you over with my truck. I mean, I take it that seriously. We are not here to take advantage of people. We're here to serve people. We're here to help right. Them build great businesses with information security integrated. But in that, every one of these is essentially a multi-year contract. It's monthly recurring revenue, and the margin is somewhere between 50 to 60%. Mm-hmm. So what MSP wouldn't want that type of revenue stream if they wanted to do things right? I think there's also a lot of ignorance on the part of the MSPs, because you can use a vCISO service to sell products, but only if it's in the context of what's in the best interest of the customer based on risk, right? Where you spend the next information security dollar is on your most significant unacceptable risk, period.
Exactly. And in that sense, the MSP, they have to be completely transparent about how they're evaluating the risk and why it's a high. You don't want to have someone that says that something's a high critical risk and it happens to match a service they sell or a product they sell. Transparency is a way to manage this. And I think that can be done. And to your point, this is a huge opportunity for MSPs because of the margin and the opportunity to also draw in more customers. But it has gotten to the point where both with that and some other areas of the industry, it kind of leave a little bit of a bad taste. Now I'm going to pivot over to certifications for a little bit, because I definitely want to briefly tell the story about how you and I connected. There's a lot of certifications out there, and there's a lot of certifications out there that just seem to really produce more for the group that's providing the certifying as opposed to the end person. Right. And and I've been transparent about this. When I first heard about the Certified Virtual CISO program, I didn't have a great experience of trying to get information, and it left a bad taste in my mouth. Right. And so for about a year and a half, I'm thinking that this is along those lines. I never investigated it further. Had an opportunity because of a Facebook post, and I didn't call out specifically the certification, but Meg, and I can't remember her last name from your group, she reached out to me privately saying, hey, are you talking about the CVCISO? And I said, yeah, yes, I am, and this is the reason why. And she pointed me towards some resources, got me to kind of change my mind in the beginning. I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I was looking at something that was immature at the time. To fast forward through that, that's what led to, and I've talked about this on LinkedIn, that being invited to take the course, and of course, this is going to take an awful lot of my time because it's a 60-hour course, which first right. of all, I didn't even realize that at first. This is 60 hours. I've read the syllabus. It's like there's some awesome, awesome stuff in there. I'm excited about it. I'm taking it to give it the evaluation from someone who's been in the industry not nearly as long as you have, but as far as this virtual CISO, but I've been doing this for 34 years in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about it. And I'm so happy that during this process, you and I got to connect. And really, I think the thing that sold me more is that immediately you didn't try to sell me on the product or on the certification or anything. You sold me on the why you're doing it and completely about service. So let's talk a little bit more about why the Certified Virtual CISO program, what are you trying to solve and how are you trying to solve it?
Well, I think a lot like you. That was really what was so refreshing for me too, as we were, you know, getting through, you know, that initial introduction was, this is a guy who's on the same mission as me. You know, we're coming at it from different perspectives. And that's one of the things I've really learned as over the years is the value of perspective. You know, everybody's perspective is valid. What's not sometimes valid is the conclusions we come to from our perspective. And the same thing is applied to information security. The worst risk decisions we can make are the ones that are without context or poor context, right? And how do you get context? You get context from different perspectives. And so I'm super excited that you're coming too, because you're going to bring a really valuable perspective that we need to know, we need to hear. So even when you said, you know, the first time you reached out, you didn't get information, it's great to know that, because we don't know the perspective. We don't know how we're viewed outside of our own perspective. So getting that was really, really, you know, important. The VCISO program started, we've always known, you know, people in this industry, we've always known that VCISO was kind of just, I mean, universally kind of crap. I mean, what is VCISO? At FR Secure, when we were first trying to learn this back in 2008, 2009, 10, we had a VCISO practice. And essentially what it was our customers were paying me $3,000 to $5,000 a month to be their VCISO. And I called them, you know, after a while, I'm like, we're not really solving anything here. So I asked them, why are you paying me? And they're like, well, you're our VCISO. I'm like, but I'm not doing anything. I haven't done anything for you. They're like, well, it's nice just to have you available. And I'm like, that doesn't cost you anything. You don't need to pay me $3,000 to $5,000 a month to pick up the phone. So we actually stopped doing VCISO services for a while. And what we needed to design was a way to approach this where there's mutual accountability, where you can hold me accountable as your VCISO for specific things that I need to accomplish for you and vice versa. Right. So because me doing my stuff without you taking ownership of your stuff doesn't really solve the problem.
Right.
So we created that service. And then the final straw for me, which led to creating the CVCISO, was I was in a meeting. I don't think I was supposed to talk in this meeting. I think I was just there to be an observer. But there were three companies that were vying for VCISO services from 29, I think, tribal colleges. And the three were a consulting company out of a really prestigious school. I guess they have a consulting company. I'm not going to mention by name,
right?
Because it's your podcast, but on my podcast, I would call it out, but
okay.
And then there was another big consulting company, MSP, and then there was FR Secure. And the question that was posed by the group was, tell me how your vCISO services work. And the first organization to answer was this consulting company from the college. And what they said was, well, essentially we sell you a block of hours and you draw from those that block of hours as we perform services for you. And then the next company was the other company. And they said, well, yeah, we essentially do the same thing. And I wasn't, like I said, there were other team members there from FR Secure that were supposed to answer, but I couldn't help myself. So I said, can I answer this question? We don't do it that way. It would be stupid to do it that way for a number of reasons. Number one, you take all the risk as the customer if I charge you hourly, right? I'm incented to take as long as possible to get this work done. I don't, exactly. There's no value for me to use previous work that I've done to create it faster for you. And number two, where's the C in any of that? There's no leadership in me just taking orders from you. I need to lead this information security program for you. So immediately after that, decided to do the CVCISO program. The stupid thing, it is kind of stupid, is I created the content on the fly as I was teaching it. So that 60 hours, I think, put about 60 years on this body. But whatever.
Well, but I mean, I can understand being able to create the content just sort of like brain dumping, because it, as I was mentioning before we started recording, going through one of the early videos, I think for the last cohort's first week, I think I somehow got a hold of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, everything that you were saying, it's like, I agree with it. It's exactly, it's yes, yes. I think though that one of the other things that the program is trying to solve is that there's a lot of people out there that tend to put vCISO in their LinkedIn, and folks that have been in the industry for like maybe 2 or 3 years, and they're an IT security analyst or a manager or something like that. One of the things that I've found just by looking at your curriculum is that it demands looking at it from a risk management perspective, all second line. And that's one of the things I'm not seeing with a lot of the folks that are calling themselves vCISOs out there. Is that part of what you're trying to address as well, to kind of level set and make sure that these folks that actually call themselves vCISOs actually have the experience to offer the leadership and the risk management acumen?
Yeah, for sure. And I like simplifying things. So I think we complicate a lot of stuff in this industry. A vCISO role, you do two things. You consult the business to make good information security risk decisions, and then you implement those risk decisions. That's what you do. And so your quality of consultation will be dependent upon your knowledge, your experience, your motivation. But if you keep in mind that really your job is to consult the business to make those good risk decisions, it puts it on you as the CISO to serve them better. Because if they're making poor information security risk decisions, you have to sort of question how good you are at consulting them. Mm-hmm. And good risk decisions, because that's what information security is at the end of the day. It's not risk elimination, it's risk management. And for me to make, as my own business leader, for me to make the best decisions, I have to be able to weigh the risks of those decisions, right? What's the potential outcome? If I do this, what's the chances of something maybe not good happening, and what would the potential impact of those of that be, and weigh that against, what are the potential benefits? And the same sort of thing needs to apply from a business leadership perspective. They have lots of risks that they need to, account for all the time: financial risk, compliance risk, reputational risk. This is just another risk. And I think businesses are not getting good consultation in general.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to start. The cohort actually starts April 9th, if I'm not mistaken. And you said you are teaching this one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's time for me to get back into, because I think it's time to cycle, time to, go through an improvement process. And the fact that you're going to be there and, some others, I think it's a great to get your feedback, get your input firsthand, where I can, influence more directly, you know, how we can just continue to improve the program. Because ultimately, this isn't even supposed to be about me. It's not even supposed to be about it's not even supposed to be about Security Studio. This is supposed to be about the VCSO, the CVCSO community. And I'm really looking forward to the time when I can just hand it off. Like, the community runs this. I don't want it anymore. That day will come.
So is the cohort filled, or is there still room if people want to join?
Yeah, there's always room. We'll make room.
So and how would they be able to join? Where would they go?
I think the best way is probably just to go to cvciso.com.
Oh, well, that's easy to remember.
Well, it's because we listen to you. We listen to your input. Like, you know, give me more information about this. I'm like, well, yeah. So thanks for the input. Thanks for the feedback.
Oh, well, I'm glad that maybe I helped a little bit there.
You do help.
I am so much looking forward to it. So the cohort starts on the 9th, and I will be periodically, I'm not going to commit to how often or not I'm going to post with regards to my feedback. I might do it periodically during the 10 weeks, or I might do it at the end of the 10 weeks. But I'm really looking forward to it. I think what you guys are doing are great. You're a leader in the industry here, and I really appreciate your leadership and your direction. And again, your focus on service and your why on how you're doing this. But I have to think that in some ways, running all this has got to be stressful in some way, shape, or form. Outside of drinking Monster energy drinks, or in my case, Celsius, what's one way on how you deal with the stress?
So I love talking about mental health too. That's just another, I think, under discussed. You know,
it's a huge problem in our industry, and it's harder to understand why it's a problem in our industry outside of the fact that maybe some of it's because of the technology changing, some of it's what the pressures we put on. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to short circuit what you were saying.
I love your perspective, because the there's this what do you call that? I can't remember the word, but anyway, we don't talk about these things, and we need to talk about these things. I've lost 4 friends in this industry over the years who have taken their own life because we don't talk, not because we don't talk about these things, but it certainly didn't help. They didn't have somebody to talk to about these things. So for me, ADHD is my superpower. It's also my curse. So what makes it less cursy is self-awareness and, you know, being surrounded by people that I trust and that love me. Hobbies I do, I scuba dive, I play guitar, I play bass guitar, I weld, I do ADHD things, right? So, I mean, you find things and just let your mind kind of go. And there's so much therapy in just finding healthy habits or healthy hobbies, you know, that aren't going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, in fact, I think I brought this out before. I have got one of these in my office, finally returning to doing a little bit of guitar stuff. I first picked it up sort of myself about 30 odd years ago and then left it alone for a while. I was never any good. But what I'm enjoying now today is that there is that detachment. Once you start like working on it, it helps with the detachment from the analytical side. And also, as you get older, it helps not only with keeping the brain working, but also the hands. I think I have a little touch of arthritis right now. Oh. And so I'm a firm believer. You mentioned music, and I'm like, wait, let me show up the guitar. Every time someone mentions music, I show the guitar in my office.
So. I love it.
I mean, it's just a really, really cheap old Fender. Don't get me wrong. I just bought Alvarez. Just recently, and another acoustic, and I love that. It's like 4 times this guitar, but that's okay. Having something in the office is good to pick on, literally. Amen. Evan, future plans for FR Secure, for Security Studio, for the CVCSO program, for your musical career?
Well, yeah, a lot of people call me crazy, and you know I am. So that you just get kind of past that. So my current frustration is, comes from a personal story, which I'll share at some other point. But I'm on a mission to map the attack surface of the entire United States for a couple reasons. One was I was told to prove up that personal point, which I'll tell the story some other day. But two, because I was told I couldn't. And three, which is probably the biggest motivation, is we should know, you know, this or the entire country, it's nothing private. There's no, you don't need authorization to go, you know, map an attack surface. So I started with 3,144 counties in the United States, and I'd map the attack surface of all of them. It took me 3 months because I hadn't automated anything yet. And I chose counties because I could plot them on a map. It was very easy to see colors on a map. And so I call that Project Broken Mirror. The next place we're going is K-12 municipalities, water treatment facilities, and I'm not going to do it. We need to foster a community to do that. This needs to be a community effort. Because one of the things I noticed when I showed people the map, people that had knew nothing about information security, they immediately looked at their county and said, why is mine red?
Right. That's what I was just thinking. It's like, hey, what does Williamson County look like in Tennessee? It's like, that's my county. And you know what you're doing there? You're personalizing it. It isn't this ambiguous blob out there that it's like, oh, cybersecurity is bad. You know, it's like, oh, this is exactly what's going on here in my county, and this is the reason why. And extending that to K-12 and to other areas and verticals and industries and utilities and all that, I love it. Offline, I definitely want to hear more about it.
Love to have your help there too, man.
Well, that's what I'm thinking about. It's you're a much smarter person, I think, than I am. But if I can help, I would love to help in some way, shape, or form. Evan, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, and I am looking forward to the community. By the time this airs, it'll actually be the cohort, rather, will actually be starting in less than a week. So I'm looking forward to that and looking forward to letting people know about it. So thank you again, though, so much for your time.
I have a feeling we're going to become very good friends, Greg. So thank you.
I hope so. I like Mexico. I hope you like Tennessee.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Another discussion. ADHD is going to take me to the path. We're done. We'll talk about that later.
All right, everybody, stay secure.